Okay, we're now recording.
Good evening. The Chair of the Kenosha County Human Services Committee will call the meeting to order of Monday, November 3rd. The time is 6:30. Yeah, 6:30. Ms. Davis, could you please call the roll?
Stephen Holman.
Present.
Mike Gable.
Here.
Greg Retzloff.
Here.
Anita Johnson.
Here.
Aaron Decker.
Here.
Leah Blau.
Here.
David Arrington.
Here.
And Brianna Ayers and Julia Alberth are both excused. The Youth and Governance.
Agenda item number 2, citizen comments. If there are any citizens present, please step forward and address the committee. State your name and address for the record. You have 5 minutes. That would be the sound of crickets. Agenda item 3, approval of the minutes of 9/8/14 with the Joint Human Services Board.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Motion by Supervisor Gable, second by Supervisor Blau. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Also, approval of the minutes of 10/22/14 with the Human Services Board and Human Services Committee. Joint meeting we had.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Motion by Supervisor Gable, second by Supervisor Arrington. All those in favor?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Agenda item number 4, approval of county executive appointment of Ellen Cupford to the Kenosha County Human Services Board.
I'm making a motion to approve it. She's not here.
No.
I've known her.
There's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion by Supervisor Gable, second by Supervisor Blau. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Just for a procedural matter, not that I'm hung up on those things, you just may want to just continue. Just because. So it's on the record.
Oh, yeah. Well, just that the Department of Human Services would like to appoint Ms. Ellen Cupford to the Human Services Board. Because of her, she's had a long history in the community and is a retired school social worker. Be a great asset to the board and a great asset to the work we do. And she's very involved in the community currently.
We, she couldn't make it tonight, I assume, or not, or
she couldn't make it tonight, and many of us know her throughout the years. Maybe you don't. She's a retired school social worker and has been involved in such things as Habitat for Humanity, all the things listed on the appointment letter that is here, and has been involved like with CUSH and other human service related activities. I don't know what the conflict was tonight. I don't have that information with me.
Could you invite her next? I mean, we can approve, right? I'm not saying that, but maybe next time, next month. I mean,
sure.
I don't know. I mean, I totally don't know who this person is. I'm going to vote yes. You know,
okay.
That's all. Because I think the chairman had asked to try to have these people show if they could. And I understand conflicts, but just a thought. Do what you want.
I think we already did.
Yeah, we already voted.
I did. I said I'm going to vote for her. No, she's right. But I just wondered if she could come anyways. If not, I don't care. I mean, I'm just saying.
Fine. I mean, we have the person's information. If you want to call and have coffee with her, I'm sure she wouldn't object to
all right, that. All right, never mind.
She's been around the community a little longer than
never
forever.
Mind.
I'm not saying no. I just wondered if there might be something that's more.
He just said no. Let it go. Forget it.
Okay. Agenda item number 5, presentation of the Summer Youth Employment Program.
Okay. Well, thank you. We had some brief technical difficulties, so what I'd like to do is pass out some old-fashioned written information. If you just want to take one and pass it down, and pass those two down that way, if you could. And then I'll also pass a couple of other things. So go ahead and take.
We're throwing. Here, Mike.
All right. Actually, we want to wait till we're done signing so you have our full attention.
Certainly. Certainly. We'll just pass out the materials and I'll wait. Of course. Sorry.
Oh, I'd have got it, Leah. I didn't even see it.
Good.
use your pen?
Thank you.
No.
Mine.
Not gonna say.
I wouldn't have such a nice pen as that.
Yeah, go ahead.
I steal them from work. I'm just kidding.
Borrow.
I never have one.
Wow. Totally electronic now. Yeah. We're all set? Okay. Well, thanks for letting me present this evening. We put on the agenda presenting our summer youth employment program, but I wanted to take a few minutes before we get into the details of that just to highlight the summer youth employment program is really part of a total intervention we do to divert kids away from crimes. And every year for the last 9 years, we've presented a juvenile justice report to the community. That's this document that you have in front of you. And actually the cover of it is the mural that was created by teenagers in the Youth Employment of the Arts back in 2013. And what the juvenile justice report can do is it highlights the reason we have all the services and the interventions we do with youth, which is to hold youthful offenders accountable, restore victims of juvenile crime, protect the community, and develop competencies in youth. And that's where the youth Summer Youth Employment Program will come in as strong focus. One of the things that I think people forget about often in Kenosha is if you read the paper, you tend to read stories of kids that have gotten in serious trouble and that maybe have gotten in trouble numerous times. The reality is, of all the kids we work with, 72% do not reoffend and get into trouble a second time while they're on supervision with us. So it's almost three quarters of all the kids. That number has held steady for years, which means we're doing good work in intervening in those kids' lives. A couple pages in the report, it gives you an idea of how many kids we work with. We work with probably about 240 kids in a year that have come in contact with the juvenile court system for delinquent behavior or truancy. And then later in the report, it does give you a breakdown of the ethnicity and gender of those kids. Not surprisingly, the majority of the kids we work with are male, which if you think of that's the type of kids that get in trouble more often in the community than girls. But African-American youth are overly represented in the community, in the juvenile justice system, compared to their makeup of the community as a whole. And it discusses that a little bit in this report. The other thing that I want to highlight for you is most kids come into the system because of misdemeanor crimes. That's on the fourth page. That is, it is not these serious, horrible batteries that kids are brought into supervision for, but it is much more minor offenses. Can you give a couple examples of that, Donna?
Batteries, disorderly conduct, retail theft. And then when we do see felonies, most often they are possession of drugs on school ground, usually prescription medications.
Yeah. And that's a big one for
they're not
kids
supposed
to sell.
Have.
Yeah, not their prescription.
Yeah.
And they're using them to get high or just selling them for the kids to get high. Not every child is court ordered to do community service work, but often when kids commit crimes in the community, they're found delinquent and they're asked to do some community service work in order to give back to the community, in order to sort of make amends for their delinquent behavior. Yeah. And so our completion percentage of that, we're real proud, is 90%. Meaning the majority of the kids who ordered community service, they do complete those hours, and we get the majority of those hours completed overall.
And 96% of youth at least start them. Rarely do we have a youth that is 100% non-compliant. So 96% have done some or all, and 90 have done all.
Restitution is a tougher for us to get such a high level of, and that's on page 6. And really, when you think of it, it has to do with the kids we're working with and the difficulty in finding employment for kids like that, because these are teenagers; they don't have money,
right?
Per
and
se,
nor do their families.
Yeah. But we do, we don't let restitution, if they have not paid all the restitution, we can order a civil judgment at the completion of their supervision, which means it's a bill that those kids have to pay in the future.
And the civil judgment is entered in the name of the child and the parent.
Yeah. The biggest, the other, a couple of stats, I talked about the non-recidivism rate, that's how many kids don't get in trouble again. And we've also looked, if you look on page 7, of the 54 youth at least 17 years of age at case closure in 2012, 76% have not been convicted of a criminal offense, either misdemeanor or felony, in Wisconsin adult court or as of the date of this report. So what that's showing you is the interventions that you're supporting through the county budget process and all the programs, they're working. Because what it is kids are coming into the system as juvenile offenders. They've made a big mistake. They have committed a delinquent act, but they're responding to the interventions, and it's lasting over time, which is, and for those of you who don't know, kids 17 and older, 17-year-olds are not treated as juvenile delinquents. 17-year-olds are treated as adult criminals. You are actually charged with an adult crime if you're charged with a crime at 17.
I was going to ask.
Sure.
Do we have programs for, you know, I'm a mom, so I still think kids are kids until they're, you know.
Yes.
Do we have special programs for youth, younger adults that would be 18, 19, 20?
Well, the Summer Youth Employment Program is one of those programs that we've opened up through 21. Up into including 21.
Okay.
Yeah, and we have some, and Kenosha Human Development Services has some programs for youth that have aged out of care that are still trying to, you know, find their way, so to speak. Yes, yes.
And also Prevention Services Network, when they're working with a family,
yes.
If they're working with a family who has minor children, there is a 17, 18, 19, or 20-year-old still in the home, they still extend those services to the young adult in the home.
You know, the problem is a lot of times those kids aren't in the home
anymore. Yeah.
They're out on their
own. One of the things we've worked at is we've built a large array of useful, focused treatment services in the community to help kids make better decisions, learn appropriate skills so they don't get in trouble again, they don't commit other delinquent acts. And those services are really working, and the way you can see that is that we have not needed to use court-ordered placements at such a high level as we have in the past. And our non-recidivism rate, i.e. the kids who are not committing crimes again, is staying the same. So later in this report, it talks about average length of stay in different placement settings. And overall, the biggest change is that if you look at a chart overall, the number of kids going into different, we call it substitute care, has actually gone down in for delinquent youth. I'm not talking about children who have been abused and neglected. That's a whole different population. So if you look on page 10 and 11, you look at just generally those charts, with regular foster care really being an outlier. Group homes, you know, we used to have up to 23 kids going to group home. We're in the high teens. In treatment foster care, we used to have up to 32 kids go into treatment foster care that were delinquent. We're down to 16. And residential care, that used to be used much, almost twice as much. And really what that means is we've really improved our services in the community, so we don't need, so kids are responding to that. They're not getting in trouble a second, third time, and they're not being court-ordered into a more intensive, secure setting.
That allows us to work with the child, not only in their natural environment, but also to work with the family. Because we can remove these kids, these artificial settings, residential treatment, corrections, treatment foster care, and then there's not enough resources to still provide the intensive services needed to that family to prepare that home for their return. Where if we're able to keep those kids in the home, we're able to work with not only the child on competency building and learning from their decision, but we're willing to work with the parents, so hopefully they can better bear that child and any younger kids that come behind them.
Has anything changed in placing a child, how you decide on placing a child into a treatment foster care as compared to a regular? Has it become more difficult for them to get treatment?
That's a good question. We've improved our ability to assess kids. We adopted a number of years ago this one assessment tool for delinquent kids called the Youth Assessment Screening Instrument. Mm-hmm. There's a page at the end of this report sort of explains it in detail. That helps give us a better handle on what kids need. The state also developed a separate assessment tool called the Child Adolescent Needs
Survey.
Thank you.
CANS.
That also helps focus what kids need. But then how it really works is you check to see what will meet those kids' needs, and then you still have to present that to the court. And the court's still going to make that ultimate decision of whether that... And sometimes in delinquent kids, you know, it's not just... No one just accepts what the division says. The kid's gotten in trouble a second time. It's not unusual for the district attorneys to take a much firmer hand and say they really need the most restrictive care. And so that's where a judge makes those decisions.
But funding doesn't bear any weight? The availability of funds or anything like that?
Well, we're budgeted correctly for the places we use. Cost of care has gone up, as I think Lori presented. I mean, everything... is more expensive now than it was.
That's what I'm getting at. I'm wondering if we can actually place less kids. So if we're maybe choosing fewer kids to give treatment to because of the cost.
No, because really all the kids are court ordered in a placement, and if our treatment isn't working with delinquent youth, they're going to get into more trouble, basically, and they're going to get themselves placed.
I just wanted to make sure that's why I'm seeing the downward trend.
Yeah. No. like for example, we have less kids going to corrections, which is, you know, that's the equivalent of an adult prison for youth. Mm-hmm. Now they've moved corrections to Lincoln Hills, which is in Irma, Wisconsin, which is about 4 hours north of here. And they used to have a facility in Wales, Wisconsin. The state closed that. And I don't think the distance has really changed judges willing to look at it, but I think it gives everyone a little more pause to really see if we're willing to try other things in the community. Because once you send a kid to that facility, those families aren't going to have almost any contact with their son or daughter. That is really the truth. The families we work with tend to be lower income level. They don't have the time or even the money to pay for the gas to go all the way up there frequently. And even if they provide busing, and they do that from Milwaukee and things like that, mm-hmm. it's an incredibly long journey for a very short visit. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that I Donna Rhodes, if you don't know her, she's our gang intervention supervisor. And one of the things that she has done for us is helped... sort of steer our summer youth employment program. And when you talked about kids, what do we do for older youth? I'm going to stop talking for a few minutes. I'm going to let Donna talk, because we're really unique. We're running a great employment program for at-risk kids that is making a difference in their lives. And I'd like to sort of segue, if I can, into that a little bit. But I'll take another question about this before we do that, if you'd like.
Can you cover everything? Okay. Supervisor Arrington?
Sorry.
Thank you, Chair, Mr. Chairman. Anita had led really into the question that I was going to ask you, and I want you to be honest. Are we adequately funded, you know, to do what we need to do with these youth in Kenosha County? Because I'm a big advocate for, and this may be off subject, if we are not... If we don't have enough, then we need to look at it for planning for the future. Because what I'm seeing here is this is a step that we're taking as to prevent our children from going to prison.
Right.
You know, because, you know, I don't support that the prison pipeline thing that's taking place in this state, and especially here in the southeast part of Wisconsin with Milwaukee, Racine, and Kenosha. So I guess what I'll be looking for in the future is some feedback. Is how can we increase, you know, our presence? How can we increase this program? Is it adequately funded enough? Are we, and this may lead into the summer jobs program, are we encouraging some of the older ones that may not be finishing high school to get the GED. I know they also have a degree that they can take a test for in Kenosha Unified Schools. This degree is like an electronic degree, an assessment that they take, and they're able to graduate and go on to Gateway or go to Parkside or something. And they, you know, I guess that I'm kind of skimming the surface without really knowing all of the background of the program. You know, some of the other things that we're doing here in Kenosha County, because I'm excited about this. I'm definitely for it, and anything that we can do to continue to push these kind of programs forward in this county, this is what we need to support. This, you know, we to prevent our children from continuing down a bad path of bad choices, where they end up there in Black River Falls and all these other prisons that we have in the state. Because I don't support that. So that, I guess that's what I'm looking for. Are we adequately funded at this time? And are we planning for the future to expand?
Well, a real quick, simple answer. We are adequately funded this year. Mm-hmm. Our budget for 2015 is adequately funded.
Okay.
The one that the budget you approved, I think we're in good shape for 15.
Okay.
We're going to face a budget struggle in 16. We may lose some revenue, but we make some plans for that already with some other services that comprehensive community services may help fill that void.
Okay.
So I'll know better halfway through 15 how that's turning out. As far as how everything works well in Kenosha, is that, you know, on the back page of this report lists all these agencies, and many of them we have different contracts with that work with youth in the community, such as Kenosha Human Development Services, One Hope United, Prevention Services Network, Professional Services Group. We use all of these different services that these agencies provide that help steer kids from crime. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons why there's less kids going to corrections in Kenosha than there were, you know, I literally, and not making this up, a dozen years ago we would have had, we would have sent, what?
40
kids in corrections.
At any given time, we'd be sitting in corrections.
40 kids in juvenile corrections. We placed all of last year, I think, 5 kids, it says in this report.
Okay.
And we have a total, I think, of 6 kids there right now. And sometimes kids don't leave corrections very quickly. So I believe all the services we are using are effective. They're helping youth make better decisions, so they're becoming law-abiding members of our society. Mm-hmm. Hopefully they'll get complete their education, get a job, and are working, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with you. Kids that there are, unfortunately, there'll always be a couple kids that end up in corrections, mm-hmm. because they really commit something violent, and you have to keep community safe from them.
Absolutely.
But that is the smallest number, and if you're getting all the other programs in place, you should use it less and less.
Okay. Supervisor Deck?
Yeah.
You have the, on page 7, the non-recidivism rate.
Yes.
At 72%.
Yes.
Now that's not repeating an offense even once.
Correct.
But where is, like, the other 28%? Are they habitual reoffenders, or maybe they just reoffended once or twice, they fell off here, or, you know?
That's a great question.
The vast majority of our kids will come back for one additional offense. And we do have...
Not the majority of that 28%.
Yes, 28%, that's what I mean, of the 28%.
Most of those come in for one offense. We do have a few that will come in for a very serious offense or keep coming in. And then, unfortunately, what happened with those young people is that our DA would then likely petition for waiver to adult court.
Okay.
But then that, we look at the number of kids at 17 who have not been in the adult system. Those one, we can't count those in that number because those have been waived into adult court anyway on a serious offense. But the vast majority of our programs focus on competency building, and that's where we want to build competency in all areas, in family relationships, in work environment, in education. So I think that's why we have such a low recidivism rate. And then of that 28% that do come back, they're not serial offenders.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. It's interesting. There's always one small group of kids that gets into way too much trouble. And, you know, that's a shame. But
we deal with them.
But
even those kids, I've been doing this for a long time, those kids will bop around the county jail system till they get about 21, 22. You see them at 23, 24, they have a family, they have a job, they've settled down, they are not lifetime criminals.
Any other questions on the report?
Reza Reslock.
No, she answered it.
Okay. I just one. You mentioned that in 2016 we might be losing some revenue. You want to be a little more specific about that so we know what to keep an eye out for?
Well, we received some extra revenue from the state. We lost that large IM revenue of $4 million, and the state's cut us back over, replaced some of that revenue over the last 4 years. And this 2015 would be the last year of that $750,000. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
So I would love to talk to you guys about the Summer Youth Employment Program. This is a jewel of our community. We have, this past summer, this is our sixth year, we employed 242 at-risk youth. And at-risk can mean anything from homeless, kids in foster care or aging out of foster care, delinquent or at risk of delinquent, teen parents at risk of failure, just kids living in poverty. And what we do is we have a limited number of referral sources, because with a program like this, we would know there's a lot of people that know someone that can get in this program. So we work with Unified School District, a couple of our community agencies, Boys and Girls Club, and Community Impact Programs, and the Division of Children and Family Services. And then we also reach out to ResCare, who does our W-2 funding, so we can touch some young adults, and probation and parole. And what we do is we start working with those kids, especially the agencies. They start working with those kids months ahead. They really use this as an incentive-based program. Okay, if you follow your court orders, you don't get involved with the court, you pass your classes, you attend school every day, we can get you in the Summer Youth Employment Program at the end of the summer. They prep them for work. They prep them for the interview. They do mock interviews with these kids. First year, we didn't do interviews. We just let people refer in, and anybody who was referred in got a job. But the second year, we decided this is real work, and we need young people to treat it like real work. So everybody had to come in for an interview. But what they did was, it was more like the whole program is based on mentoring. The interview was even a mentoring experience. They came in, and at the end of every interview, each child got a critique of what you did right, what you can do differently the next time, how did you answer, a better answer to that question, or maybe where this versus that. So when they go to an unsubsidized job interview, they will go with some experience of knowing, you know, how to answer questions or how not to answer questions in some instances. So we've had kids that come in and say, oh, I don't, my worker told me I had to come, or my mom making me do this. This is real work. If you went to another job, you wouldn't be given that opportunity. Doesn't happen a lot, but we probably have 4 or 5 kids a year that really don't want to work and someone's making them do it. But for the vast majority of these kids, they've worked hard for this opportunity all year. The Boys and Girls Club in particular, and Kenosha Unified, this is the carrot for so many kids to keep them focused and keep them positive and being successful all year long. We had an increase in private employers this year, because one of the things we saw is 37%, 37 kids, or 15% of our kids got unsubsidized employment at the end of work of the end of the summer. That is a great number. Nationally, programs like this average 6 to 7% of their kids finding unsubsidized employment at the end of the program. We have places like Festival Foods and Piggly Wiggly that hire these kids on and basically mentor them for the 8 weeks of the program. And then if they did well, then they just did a Piggly Wiggly application and they became an employee of Piggly Wiggly. They became an employee of Festival Foods. There's a young person at Popeyes right now that's been working there for 5 years, started in this program. So that's the key to having private employers on board. And we did see an increase in our private employers. And I think that's why we've seen an increase in our number so far, our kids hired unsubsidized. This is a great partnership with many community agencies. Kenosha Unified is a partner, and they grant the kids work 18 hours a week, and then 2 hours a week they have an educational class. For completion of that educational class, plus the 8 hours a week, eight weeks of work, they get a half credit towards graduation. That half credit towards graduation can make a difference in whether a child graduates or not. when kids are, you know, struggling academically, to get a half credit. That could make the difference between someone not graduating and graduating.
Sorry, Supervisor Blau and then Supervisor Johnson.
Oh, okay.
And then Supervisor Gable.
You talked a little bit about mentoring. So who mentors them? The places of employment? Does somebody from the county?
The work site.
The work site?
We recruit work sites and we tell them this is not free labor. This is someone you can come in and you mentor them on whatever the job is, but then also the soft skills about working a job, coming to work on time, appropriate dress, how to get along with coworkers, how to handle conflict. So the youth are an employee of the Boys and Girls Club for the 8 weeks they work, but they are actually placed at a work site where they're mentored and they learn about the job.
Okay. And they complete work.
And they work.
They're working.
Yes.
Yeah.
They work.
Okay.
Supervisor Johnson?
I just wanted to clarify. You said 37%, but it was 37, right? That got
37 or 15%.
It was 15%?
Okay. 15%.
That's okay. That's what I wanted to clarify. Also, I was just reading how 124 of the in-school participants received half credit.
Yes.
Was that about equivalent to how many were in school?
You know, I was trying to get that number today, and I didn't get it in time. We usually lose about 10 or 15 kids who, for some reason, don't complete the program. And that could be they got an unsubsidized job. And we've actually had people who got an unsubsidized job and said, hey, but I need this half credit. Can I still come to the class on Friday? We have other kids who unfortunately behaved badly and had to be let go. We have other kids that just moved out of town. Different reasons we have a certain percentage drop off. So 124, we usually have about 150, 150 or so in school youth, and the rest are
half.
Yeah.
Okay, that's, you know, that's still good. You know, 37% would have been better, but 15% is still almost double of what.
Yeah, it's double nationally what everyone else is seeing.
That's good. That's
and it's early. I mean, it's October. The program just ended in late August. These kids would take these skills. They will go and they will apply for somewhere and they can put down, I had a job at the Boys and Girls Club for these 8 weeks. Mm-hmm. And just having a resume or a application that you can put a previous job on will get you preferential treatment of someone who has nothing. Or going in and at, you know, a year ago, they maybe thought, a young lady came in with a dress so short a couple of years ago, I don't know how she could bend over. I don't even know how she could walk, you know, in that dress. And unfortunately, when we mentioned her and said, you know, that's not an appropriate outfit for a dress for a job interview, her mother said, she said, my mother said I looked nice when I left. So these are the challenges we're coming across. That young lady will now know she goes to a job interview, she will wear something more appropriate, and where she might not have got a job before someone told her, gave her this advice, she might be able to go somewhere and get one now.
Right.
So we expect that number to go up.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful.
Supervisor Gable, then Supervisor Decker.
Question. I wander around my district and I see all these older people. I mean, they're still living in their houses, but you could see they could use help clean up the yards. I mean,
yeah.
Any of these organizations, I mean, and most of these people don't have money. I mean, they're living on Social Security. They're not, I don't want to say they're dragging the neighborhood down, but, you know, you can obviously see they could use somebody 3-4 hours a week to clean out the shrubs, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe take down a broken fence or paint a fence. I mean, is there any organization out there or churches or something that are...
Well, I know for, like, raking of leaves and snow removal, our community service programs will work with the aging Department of Aging to connect with older people so they can get those tasks done. But I don't know of any particular agency that just single goes and singles out families, older citizens that need help.
Yeah, like I say, I just, when I walk in my district and I talk to these people, you know, I say the bushes are okay, but, you know, God, they could have used the hedge trimming.
Yeah.
I mean, nothing. Yeah. But like I say, it's great work. You know, that's what I did as a kid. The old man put me to work trimming. And, you know, I mean, that's good work for him. And it's not hard work.
Yeah. My church actually has a group that does that for single moms, for elderly couples. It'll go and do things like fence repair or help them with something that...
Well, like I said, I think this would be great work for kids. I mean, if they ever buy a house, Lord knows they're going to have to cut the grass, trim the bushes, and paint the fence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Supervisor Decker and Supervisor Retzloff.
I have a question about the participating work sites, because you're talking about unsubsidized work and subsidized work. So the summer, the youth go into the Boys and Girls Club, and obviously I'm assuming the Boys and Girls Club is being paid by the county through some sort of RFP to implement this program. When these youth go into Gateway Technical College or Festival Foods, is Festival Foods paying for that youth to work there? Are they being paid, or how does that work?
They are acting as a mentor work site, because the child is an employee of the Boys and Girls Club, not of Festival Foods,
right,
or Gateway Technical College. So the only benefit the employer, the work sites get, is the opportunity to mentor our young people, and then the work they get in those 8 weeks. So no, the employers, for lack of a better word, do not pay anything. The benefit is that they mentor a young person.
Okay.
And they get the work.
Okay.
What it is we've had the program in our budget, and the vast majority of the money is going to the salaries of the kids.
But the kids are getting paid?
Through the Boys and Girls Club.
Okay. Right. So,
and the Boys and Girls Club is in a sense the administration of the salary piece, i.e. right. The kids have to have an employer. They have to have Social Security deducted. They have to go through all the forms that you do when you hire anybody.
Which any of these businesses, it would be a big
yes.
pain.
And then they have to get approved work permits for the kids that are under, 16 or 17 even,
yeah.
really. Mm-hmm. So the Boys and Girls Club is the employer of record, for lack of a better term.
Okay.
And they help, and with Donna and the staff there, help go through the interviewing process and help select the youth that'll be in this program. And then the Boys and Girls Club, really, for very little administration money, helps organize the private businesses in the community that are willing to take this on. And the reason it's successful is that this community is really good at working together. And so all these businesses who are willing to do this, they're willing to bring in kids into their business who, on the surface, they probably wouldn't have hired.
Right. And
on the surface, they look at them like...
For a business to bring in someone,
yeah.
and they don't know how this yeah. youth is going to work out, and... In actuality, that youth is probably sucking up one employee's time, for a while. It actually
maybe
is
part of a day, maybe.
Yeah.
Part of a day.
But
everyone benefits out
right,
of it.
Right, right.
And then we have other youth working in the county parks, doing work within the parks.
Right, they did the golf course, or the Frisbee golf
yes,
course
yeah,
several
yeah,
years
ago. Yeah,
that's
one of the projects
they
did this year. And that's where we place pretty much our highest risk of youth. But another component of this partnership is community impact programs, where they reassign their staff to go out to the county parks and work hand in hand, side by side, with these young people clearing trails, planting trees, working on the Frisbee golf course. And they're also in that process of working side by side, they're doing that mentoring. They're doing that competency building alongside them as they earn their paycheck.
Okay, so, thank you.
But the vast majority, I just want to repeat what Ron said, the vast majority of the money allocated to this program goes to the salaries of the kids. There's some additional costs, there's some busing costs, because
right.
the parks are, we go to KD Park, Petrified Springs, Fox River. There's some costs for materials for the educational component, but the vast majority is going to salaries of the kids.
I guess I didn't realize how the kids were getting paid.
Yes.
Yeah.
Boys and Girls Club is the employer. They're under Boys and Girls Club insurance. The workman's comp is through Boys and Girls Club. Everything is through Boys and Girls Club.
Okay.
And for most of these kids, and even the 18-year-olds and the young men and women, some of these people, they've never had a paycheck ever. They've never actually had a paycheck. And so we actually helped them, and they've even had one of the, which bank stepped up this year?
We had Johnson Bank. The young people can go there, because that's the bank it's drawn on, can go there with one form of ID and cash their checks for no additional cost. Doing our educational classes on Friday, we strongly discourage the check cashing places, mm-hmm. the corner stores, and when someone comes in and talks about they cashed it, we talked about, okay, how long did you work for the privilege of cashing your check? So we really strongly encourage them to use Johnson Bank. We had Southport Credit Union was a partner at some point that kids could open an account, get direct deposit, and have a free account there where they can They can get direct deposit, or they can come there and cash their checks.
Supervisor Reslaw?
Just a thought or whatever. Is sports ever been thought about in this, these arrangements? Participation in sports? I mean,
go ahead with that.
Okay, well, all right.
Take that idea farther. Help me understand it better.
Well, two examples. One, my daughter's boyfriend is a teacher. Now, this is Racine County. And he was in charge of the 7th grade girls basketball team. He started out with 14 and he ended up with 4 because they all had detentions and problems.
Oh.
Okay? My point is here is if some of these kids were at, you know, these problems and this, and I think this is great. Don't get me wrong. This is all good. An incentive if there was a side, like some teams, maybe, you know, Supervisor Arrington, like he could appreciate this, where going to school, they have to have a reason to go there. And I've always thought, I've had this conversation with the school district and Mr. Connect, especially as sports oftentimes is a big thing in some of these kids' lives. But if they're misdirected at a young age, it gets tougher. Just a thought. I don't know if that is something that the school, like, I don't know, just
I can keep the thought on that.
Through the chair, I can speak to that. I guess, not speaking for Mr. Connect, the students sign what is called a code of conduct when they participate in a sport. And I know for myself as a coach, and almost I'm quite certain all the other coaches, I think I know what he's getting. You an incentive for them to come out and play the sport. So, I mean, we can't pay them to play the sport. So that may be where the disconnect would come. They actually receive some cash, which we had two kids from Bradford last year in this program. They worked in this program. They came to the weightlifting in the morning. They worked in this program to buy their football shoes.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what some of them, they'll go and buy their shoes or they'll get their socks. They'll get all the things that they need for the sport from this program. But I see where he's going with that, though. That's definitely an incentive.
Just to keep young people focused and busy, the Boys and Girls Club will encourage participation in their sports leagues,
mm-hmm.
for instance, or participation in the teen center. And if you, come there, you do what you need to do, you follow through with everything else you have to do, school, following parents' rules,
mm-hmm.
behaving yourself in the club. This can be one of the things you can get at the end of all of that. We can get you a referral into this program.
I'll tell you what I would like to see with a lot of these outreach youth, because I know that I've just coached several coaches. We have to come out of pocket. I'd like to see maybe MC Sport or Dick's Sporting Goods, if they can't offer jobs, at least offer some kind of discount to some of the athletes that are participating in the district. Because I can tell you, they need more than one of everything, whether you're male or female. Yeah. It sounds minor with socks and shirts that they wear underneath pads and, shin guards for soccer and all these different things that they need. It'd be good if they worked in the program and they were able to have some kind of incentive, like if they go, like when they go buy their school clothes, they can go to certain stores that have 10% off. Because I know this for a fact, having worked in the district for 12 years, a lot of the kids you're getting have low self-esteem. They've made bad choices because they're trying to keep up with quote unquote the Joneses. They're wearing the same pair of jeans 3 times a week, and a lot of them kind of lash out in their behavior to take the attention off of, how they present themselves to their peers. A lot of them lash out because they're angry about the living arrangements that they have at home. They may not be receiving enough to eat. They may not be getting a consistent shower and clothes washed. These are some of the things that we face at Washington Middle School that we worked with Principal Curtis Tolfrey with over there. And I worked with Star Daly over at Lincoln. I don't know if you all have it divided up regionally, what kids come from what schools, but these are some of the things that I know for a fact that a lot of kids just speak to me about on a one-on-one level. They say, well, look at my clothes, coach. You know, they don't have a good winter coat. I know kids doubling up on sweat hoods and two pairs of mittens. That's what they wear to school. So, I mean, it we can sit here and debate and talk and throw a lot of things. I like that, the sports idea. I think maybe some kind of incentive. Because let's talk about the kid that we're really, the kid, and this is not a slam on the kid who has a more stable environment, but let's talk about the kid that you're getting. You're not getting the kid that's going to work at the movie theater or the kid that's going to, you know, work at, McDonald's or going to work at out at Dick's Sporting Goods, GNC. You're getting some kids that what led to their issues were the things that existed in their environment. And I look at some of these kids and I don't feel sorry for them. I feel a parental care for those children because that's basically what it is. These kids are materialistic in 2014, but they want shoes and they want nice looking clothes and they want to be viewed as equal on the outside with their peers. I mean, think about that. Some of the behavior issues, and we could go on all night. Young man lashed out another young man because he's not telling you the truth. He's dressed better than him. You know, he comes out of a more stable home than he does. You know, African-American male, tell you right now, it's on the record. Haircut means everything to that young man. His hair cannot grow like that for 4 and 5 weeks. It needs to be consistently cut and stay even. You know, that's just an example I throw out. You're not a happy camper if you have to come to school and your hair doesn't look right. Amen. Same thing with African-American young ladies. You know, so, I mean, these are some of the things that maybe there could be some incentive programs where if they have the good behavior in school, they're able to get discount on some shoes or discount on some clothes or, you know, something. I don't know.
I guess, yeah, he's kind of saying the same thing. Is,
yeah.
Kids going to college, you know, to get to college, sports is one great way to get there. I mean, yeah, you can go extreme and say maybe some of these kids are being used. That's at an extreme, I think. D1, D2, and D3 schools, they're not. They're there to participate. Right. There's scholarships. It's a way to get to the next step. I think sports is a great thing. And these, and getting a resume with a job is also, I can't tell you, it's not. But, I don't know, just a thought. I know that it's something, you know. There's
we definitely want to look into, you know, reaching out to some vendors and seeing if they're, if we can get the banks to, you know, cash their checks for free. Maybe we can get them, some of the stores to offer that percentage off, because most of these kids are doing with this money. They are buying their school clothes. Mm-hmm. They're buying their parents things. You know, mm-hmm. I went out after the first paycheck this year and said, what did you do? You know, really excited, what did you do with your first paycheck? So many kids told me they went out and bought something for their parent. Mm-hmm. And I just thought how awesome that was. But it was something their parent needed. So we can. That's a great idea to reach out to some of the vendors and see, or even the haircuts. We have a couple barbershops that are our work sites, you know, so since they're our partner anyway, maybe we can work out a deal where kids can get, you know, discounted haircuts.
Maybe Supervisor Aaron, can I, and someone else can maybe speak with Connect and just talk about these issues. I mean, we're about to vote next year on a $16 million referendum to improve sporting facilities. Mm-hmm. Now, and it's going to be, I assume it's going to be passed, $16 million our community is going to pay to have, you know, great fields and all that for these kids. And so, I mean, if these, some of these at-risk kids can, boy, get yourself playing some sports. Look at the schools. Are going to, you got this beautiful field and you got people behind you. Some incentive. You know, so.
It is incentive, but you know what I hate about that? And I'm sorry, but
Supervisor Johnson.
But what I hate about that is we can't lose academics in the you know what I mean? Because only so many actually get that scholarship and only so many get to that point. And if you lose the academics, you know, it's like the woman who wants her daughter to go up to be a model. You know what I mean? It's like,
but you
it's
won't.
Not going to happen. They're beautiful. We're all our children are beautiful.
You won't
They're
lose the academic part. You won't.
But yeah. You do.
Not with the code of conduct, you won't. In the state of Wisconsin, you can't have an F and participate in any sport. There's not one kid dressed for Tremper Indian Trail or Bradford. Well, that in their code of conduct.
Absolutely. But what I mean is you need better than a D to get to college.
And most of the coaches, are like at Washington, you can't play for us with less than a C. I mean, we're at least asking for it. Yeah.
We have to focus on
absolutely.
Kids taking pride in their academic
stuff.
As well.
Absolutely.
It, well taken, yeah.
Absolutely.
I guess the music kids never get in trouble.
But you're wrong.
It's probably easier to get music.
Those drummers, man.
You know, really bad viola players. But that's about it.
Your drummers were always in.
Are there more music scholarships in football? I can't imagine there's that many. Football teams aren't that big.
It depends on where it is that you go. I think typically not, because if you're at that high level, you're going to investigate someplace that has a very strong conservatory program. And so then you're competing with other people who are at that level anyway.
Melvin Gordon is 1 or 2 years away from being a multimillionaire. Came right here. How many of them are around here? That type's like, you know what I'm saying? He's going to be a multimillionaire.
Tony Romo, right there.
And I'm just saying, here in our community, we can.
You're talking about them going to college to become an NFL player, saying use the high school to get a scholarship
to go to college
to become an accountant.
Correct, exactly. Right. Yes, of course not. There's only
one
Melvin is a unique. Yes, Melvin Gordon's a very unique person. There's for every one of him, there's, you know, the statistics.
A couple hundred
but they're inspirational.
Yeah, of course. But the point is, he was here. He's a community resident. I mean, he went to school at Bradford, didn't he? Or Indian Trails, or whatever.
He's actually been meeting with at-risk youth in the community.
That's great.
Say, hey, you know, yeah.
I have no idea who this person is.
Oh, Melvin Gordon played running back at Bradford High School. I coached him when he was a freshman.
Wow.
Yeah. He goes to Wisconsin and
plays for the University of Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm. He visits the schools. Yeah, he visited my son's school. My son had a picture of him.
It's like
he's going to be a. He's going to be a. He's probably going to. Wouldn't you say a number? A first round draft pick when he goes.
Melvin has an opportunity to further his career in the NFL. He's one of the. He's a semifinalist for. I believe it's one of the Maxwell College Football
Awards,
and he's also up for the Heisman with about 8 other young men in this country. Wow. So. I know Melvin personally. I talk to him all the time. And he's just an outstanding young man. He's very humble. His humility is what makes him.
Is he getting his degree?
He's on track for his degree. And I told him, I said, you know, remember why you went. You know, I mean, just a real humble young man.
But that comes from family. You know, and we can do what we can as a community, and we should, you know. But that comes from family, that comes from your upbringing, that comes from your grandma and your mom and your dad.
Are
there any other questions, or should Miss Rose continue?
Sorry.
It's perfectly fine. That's why we're here.
Yeah.
You just mentioned the drop in crime over the summer before we almost forgot that.
Almost forgot that. When this program started in the summer of 2007, it started in 2009, but we looked at crime arrests for 2008, the year before the program started. And we looked at the same period of time every year since. In 2008, prior to the Summer Youth Employment Program, there were 1,147 juvenile arrests during this window we looked at. Now, I'm not saying it's just because of Summer Youth Employment. We have some great programs that we fund here. We have a wonderful police department. But this summer, that number was 422. During the same period of time. So each year.
66% drop.
Yes. Each year we've seen a drop in crime every year since this program's been started. And what's happening is we are taking the highest risk of youth. We are keeping them busy. We are giving them their own money. The first year we did this program, I called over to the police department and I talked to Detective Funk and I said, what are crime numbers looking like? And I had talked to Dennis Bedford from the Boys and Girls Club and he said, man, it's quiet this summer. There's fewer parties, fewer bike thefts, fewer fights. And then when the police department called me back, they were ecstatic at the drop. It went down, the average was 37% across the board. And now we had that huge jump this year. So it's probably up to about 40% average over the last 6 years. reduction in crime.
It's a life-changing event the first time you earn a paycheck.
It is.
You own that. That's,
yes.
That's
all nice. Comes back to self-esteem.
Mm-hmm. There's a picture in here of a girl holding her paycheck.
Yep. Oh,
yeah. That was from the Sunday Employment Program. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this girl will never forget this experience of having her own.
Is the drop that you mentioned in crime for juveniles, is that unique to Kenosha? Is that statewide? Is that mirroring national trends?
National trend crime is going down, but not this dramatically.
Yeah. We've done a lot of work with the programs to work with delinquent youth, and then Donna's work, and she's being modest. Donna's position as the gang intervention supervisor has been focused on mobilizing the entire community with different activities to help defer kids from getting involved in crime, whether that be working with churches, with the Boys and Girls Club, with other community organizations, with helping to bring oversight to our gang intervention programs. We have two contracts out there that really work to keep kids out of gangs. Donna's brought a lot of great focus to all of those programs and has reached out. So, you know, I have other supervisors and supervise staff that have caseloads. Donna has two staff that report to her that have caseloads. The majority of her time is outside the building doing these other activities. And I think all of that together with the Summer Youth Employment Program, with the good programs that you're supporting in our budget, I believe they're working. I just believe they're working in Kenosha. Yes. I think we're having a good impact on youth.
Supervisor Decker.
Why are these youth different, or why do these youth use the summer youth employment program versus another kid that's in high school that just goes and gets a job, you know, through the old-fashioned way?
That's a great question.
Why are there two different paths, or what?
No, that's a great question. Let me put it real clear. We created this program for the kids that are really at risk, and all those criteria that they talk about here, kids that maybe have experienced homelessness, foster kids, delinquent or former delinquent youth. These are the types of kids that don't get jobs.
Because they don't normally would just hang out?
They'd
and
hang out.
Be on the path to get a job? Where you're kind of directing them into a path to get a job?
Or they're the kids that aren't good students? And they're not gonna do well in that interview at McDonald's.
Well, no one's modeled what it's like to go to work or to go to an interview. The young lady in the very short dress, you know, she was like heartbroken. She was like, "Wow, my mom said I look good." I mean, she had no idea this is how you dress. This is not how you dress for an interview. So the interview, just going through the interview, the way, you know, some of these young people answer questions. If they walked into a McDonald's wearing what they wore, answering questions like they did, they wouldn't get hired. So this gives them an opportunity, gives us an opportunity to mentor to them what the skills you need to get that unsubsidized job.
And then our goal for this program has not to have the same kids come back year after year.
Put them on the right path and they continue.
Yeah, and then we get a new group of kids the next time. And I won't say we've had a few repeat kids that have come mm-hmm. back in the program. But overall, we're touching the lives of a new group of kids every year. And remember, it really goes up to 21. So when you talk about like an 18-year-old, 19-year-old who's maybe floundered, just barely got out of high school, and is really struggling to try to figure out how to get into the workforce or whether to try to even go to Gateway or something. So we've run this program to work with these kids that the general employers probably wouldn't hire.
Okay.
Some people have run programs like this where they've opened it up to any kid, and we've
or college students.
And we haven't done that. We don't want a kid that's a college student, frankly. That kid's going to get a job on his own.
So this is geared towards kids that might not be on the right path or not have the skills.
Yes.
To give them the skills or the little extra help to put them on that path.
Absolutely.
While the other kids, they can do it on their own.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's right.
We had a young man
last
summer.
That's a great summation.
Who he had been in two previous summers at age 14 and 15. Well, he was now 16. He had 2 years of work experience, and he was so angry that we didn't allow him back in the program. It wasn't 2 weeks later I ran into him, and he had already gotten a job somewhere else because we didn't allow him to use this program as a crutch. And before the end of the summer, he had that job and then a second job because he had the skills to go out and get that. And he got it. And he's been successful. Every time I see him, you know, he's still working. He's probably 17 or 18 now, but he's doing great.
Supervisor Harrington?
Yeah, I was just going to add to that because I know, I'm not a part of any special group. I'm not on the marquee of any special church. I consider myself a mentor. I guarantee you, in this city alone, I've mentored thousands of children, young men, all ethnicities. I'm not in gang prevention, but I've stood in the parking lots of Tremper between the Serenos and the Latin Kings, and I've known young men, and I've been able to bring young men together and tell them, not here, not now, you don't need to do that. My point is this, children can never be what they don't see and what they're not instructed to be. And I guess this is to the point of Supervisor Decker. You've got children probably, what, and would you agree with me? It's not a slam dunk on their mom. Mom don't work.
No one else in the family.
Daddy just got out of prison. This is where I'm, because they're into 10th District like this. I run into them all the time. There's no transportation to go to U-Line. They can't make it out to U-Line. They can't make it out to, Under Armour. They can't go work in that mall. So this program is geared more towards the student that has limited, I would say, social skills. They're not good communicators. You know, this is not a put-down, because I've coached many of them into communicating. They have problems with how they're supposed to dress for school, let alone a job interview, and how they're supposed to talk to adults, because they talk to their parents like they're as equal in terms of adult supervision, like they talk to their mom, and you all have done a really good job with coaching them up on that, because some of these children have some off the record anger issues. They have attitudes, and you all kind of file them down and shape them up and get them ready to go in there and do an interview, because I've talked to young men about the muscle t-shirt and the paint. I said, the Kentucky Fried Chicken's not going to let you stand over a chicken like that. Can't go in there, big earrings in your ear and headphones on your ears like that. You can't go in there like that. But I believe, like, I've got a lot of kids in the 10th district. I bet you if I look on that roll, I've got some kids right out of the 10th and out of this Lincoln Heights area, over here and down here in Washington area. That's probably where those majority of them are coming from. That's pretty much the kid that I think this program reaches out to. They don't have.
And we reach,
they don't have a dad.
Reach into those different, and further, we reach out to west of the eye. Mm-hmm. You know, we have work sites west of the eye because there's poor at-risk kids west of the eye, just like there are poor at-risk kids east of the eye. So we try to a wide noose we can capture as many at-risk kids who would benefit from this program.
Would you agree with me on this? Then you've got that kid that the mom and daddy have given them everything. They just have everything. And they have no work ethic. They're spoiled. If we're coddled, that's my word.
That's the new entitled. Entitlement.
They don't.
The group.
I'm like, because I say, where do you live? And they all tell me, and I'm like, I know who your supervisor is, and I know where you stay. And I was like, I don't have to work. And that's the attitude thing. So it doesn't. It's not just for the impoverished. You know, it's for the whole entitled thing too. But. Good program though. There's kids, they got iPhone 6S, brand new shoes, and drive a car, and they don't work no jobs. They better drive a better car than I got.
Supervisor Blau.
I have a question, Supervisor Arrington kind of made me think of it. How do they get to their places of employment? You know, if, you know, like you're talking about the kids west of the eye or, you know, going to Under Armour or whatever, you know, it's like, how do they get there?
Another example of the great partnerships this program has built. We get, the city donates bus tokens.
Oh,
we get a sheet of bus passes every week where when the kids come in on Friday for their educational class, if they have to catch a bus to work, then they're given, you know, a sheet of bus tokens, bus passes, mm-hmm. they can cut out and use every day. For the kids who work at the county parks, the West End side, we have a partnership with Kenosha Achievement Center, where kids are bused. We have about 4 pickup sites around town where they're bused and dropped off at work and brought back in. Mm-hmm. So this is just many, many agencies in town that come together to make this program so successful.
You know, before a few years ago, I never really realized there were homeless children in our area. My husband and I took in a young man who his mother was a drug addict. She was in prison, and his father died of a drug overdose. He was a drug addict as well. He was in and out of foster care. And his senior year, he was living in his car, trying to work at Walgreens part-time and go to school, finish his senior year.
We had a young man who got his first apartment because he was living in his car when this program started. He was 19 years old, and I don't know what his circumstances were that led him to being living in his car. I don't even remember who referred him, but he saved his money, and he was able to get an apartment from working in this program. And he worked at, we try to place the older kids at places where if they do a good job, they can get unsubsidized. We have a couple of factories, Vista Packaging down on Sheridan Road. I think that's where he was placed, and he had a great work ethic despite all the challenges he had, and he was able to get hired unsubsidized at the end of the year, and hopefully we helped that kickstart that young man into adulthood positively.
This kid wound up being my favorite child. You're being recorded. He helps me. We say it in front of the other kids too. They're all secure enough to take it. He's always been so helpful. I mean, he has his own apartment now, and he came over the other day and he was fixing my sink for me. He's just like, other kids don't do that. You know what I mean? They don't do that for me.
Other kids are 12. Like, they don't know how to fix the sink.
They're the ones who like want shoes, and like he was talking about the entitled ones who want everything. But just, you know, it's been a wonderful thing. He's just a wonderful, great kid who just needed somebody to care about him a little.
Anything else? No, I think that it concludes the presentation. We just want to give you an overview of it, and thank you for all your support for this program.
Thank you for the great questions.
Yeah, these are excellent questions.
One, since we were on the topic, the Summer Youth Employment Program, it would be nice, and I know there are other communities that have done this and we haven't really approached the topic, if there was a financial literacy component, that would be stupendous.
There is. In the 8-week educational classes, that's one of the things we talk about,
okay,
is financial literacy, and that's when we talk about the banking. We do that early on before they get their first paycheck. So we know, don't take, you know, if they're going to charge you 1% of your salary, how many hours did you work to make that? And so we try to build partnerships with the bank. We strongly encourage kids getting bank accounts and doing direct deposit and saving a little bit of the money they're working for. The one thing I did not mention too, we touched on restitution and how difficult it is to collect restitution. If you get into Summer Youth Employment Program and you owe restitution, we actually have you sign a voluntary wage assignment that part of your earnings automatically go towards paying your restitution.
And I know we transitioned away from this. I won't take up the committee's time. We can do that elsewhere. There were a couple of things in here I saw that I have some questions about, so I expect an email sometime in the near future, but I will not say when because I don't know when I will get to it.
Okay. That's fine.
Very welcome. Okay. Any other
questions?
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for all the great questions and a lot of good ideas. So
always fun.
What's that?
I said you're always fun.
And I apologize. We had some technical difficulties with the PowerPoint. There were some great pictures of some of the work the kids were doing.
We saw your
grandson. Well, send it.
You saw your grandson, yes.
That made the whole thing.
Yes, I would email it to you.
Yes, we could. Okay, yes. What would you like again? You email it
to the PowerPoint. She said she has great pictures in it.
Yes.
So
do it
all committee. Don't let it go to waste.
Thank you.
We had a great dedicated. This is the 2013 mural, but we actually have the 2014 mural up at the Job Center right now. We had a wonderful dedication with the county exec who came out, and you know, these kids, there's a plaque on the wall saying that they worked on this, and mm-hmm. we had kids, one boy just gasped last year when he saw his name and said, I feel like I made it.
Cool. Well, thank you. How much do you guys do?
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So I'm looking at this and I'm thinking for the first time, maybe we need to reorder this, that it should be committee members' comments before asking if we have anything else authorized by law that may be one a tiny change in the future we might want to make. Because I don't believe there is anything. No? Committee member comments? And I have just one. I don't want to dismiss your question from earlier. It's just, you know, I want to committee time for things that we all need to be in the loop on. So, I mean, if there's something in particular you feel like needs to be brought to the attention of all of us, we can do that. Just let me know. But if you just want to get acquainted with her, you know, we can arrange a meeting. That's not a problem. But I didn't want you to feel dismissed, you know.
I don't.
Okay.
I don't feel dismissed.
Cool. Just making sure.
It's an odd way of saying it, but I don't feel dismissed. I feel other things dismissed as
well. You can voice there, those people and work that out. That's okay. Is there a
motion to adjourn?
Second.
Motion by Supervisor Decker. Second by Supervisor Erickson.
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye.